Welcome to this week's edition of The Boundless Show. We're back. We all survived filing our tax returns, I hope. Were you all up super late getting them in?
I was up super late getting mine into my father-in-law, who's a CPA.
Aww,
who did my taxes.
Bless his heart.
And that was actually, what, a couple of months back? A
couple of months back. I already have my return, so I'm golden.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we actually work with an accountant and already got our return.
Yeah, basically it's the people like our producer who have to pay a little who wait late to finish the returns. Those with an incentive to get some funds back.
Yeah, our producer breaks even.
Which I hear is the way you're supposed to do it.
Uh-huh. Instead of giving it to the government, you...
Yeah, we always get excited about a nice return, and then you stop to think, now what could that money have been doing in my hands for the past 12 months versus the federal government's hands?
Starbucks.
And see, that's why some people let that be their savings account, which is frightening.
Mm-hmm. Well, my problem is I pay money to get my taxes done, and I totally shouldn't because I'm sure they're easy. But ever since I bought a house, I'm just like, I can't do it. And so then I pay a ridiculous amount. But, you know, now we're getting the bonus. There's the whole stimulus thing, which, first of all, I do have to bring up the fact that the notices that they sent us to tell us that we are receiving these cost the government $42 million.
Oh, my goodness. And mine was, ours was torn in half. I could barely read it.
Okay, first of all, let's not even talk about that. There was a first notice, and then that notice said, you'll be receiving a notice to let you know that you're going to be getting one. Okay, didn't we already receive that? So is that another $42 million? I've just blocked it out. I don't even want to think
political.
That's just typical government.
They want to take advantage of this.
It's scary.
Oh, and the other thing is that if you don't spend the money they're giving you, then it doesn't really help them. If you do what your grandma would tell you to do, which is to hold it, to save
it,
to invest it, then it's actually not good stimulus. Mm-hmm. They want you to go buy a flat panel television with that.
Well, so what do you guys do with your return?
We're
pretty excited about
card.
That flat panel television.
We're
going to pay off debt, which is not good stimulus in their eyes.
Yeah.
We should be creating more debt.
But we have reached the, we can't create any more debt. We've reached the comfort level of debt.
I'm doing something exciting. That's gotta go. Paying off my son's preschool.
Whoa. There you go.
That'll help the economy.
Good for you. It may not help the economy, but it will help his chances at getting into Harvard someday.
What is that? That's like a private preschool?
Yeah.
That's kind of snooty. Yeah. Hello, whatever.
Oh, Miss, I shop at Whole Foods.
Yes. A little bit elitist. And that's just what I'm doing, Juice Fast.
But it's gonna leave me $300 left, and I might buy an iPod or something.
See, there
wow.
you go.
Wow.
That is good for the economy.
Yeah. Maybe you should buy your wife some new clothes.
That's a good suggestion.
Candace, or like a diamond pendant. You know?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. A stone for that ring she has.
I just thought I'd throw that out there in case she listens.
No,
that's a great idea. What a great surprise that would be.
It would be our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, don't let her listen to the show, and I think she'll get her a stone for that ring.
I will.
Oh my goodness, he's committing to it.
Okay.
Whoa. Yeah, Mott's going to be saying, not a good show this week, honey. I wouldn't listen to this one.
Mott, that would blow her mind right now.
There is a passion deep within that can't be denied when you are near. There is a pleasure neath his skin that magnifies when you are here.
I had a friend send me, okay, first of all, this is funny because we've already talked about online dating. We will be talking about online dating again. Here is a newsworthy item related to online dating. There was an article yesterday, and God only knows why I still get these emails, but I'm still on eHarmony's email list, and they send me all these offers all the time. And it's basically like, you know, they try to charge you like $60 a month to have their service. But if you just hold out long enough, and anyone who's been on eHarmony knows this, that you just hold out long enough and eventually they'll give you a month for like $3.99 or something. I mean, some ridiculous. They're just like so desperate. So anyway, I get their newsletter and all this stuff. So in yesterday's newsletter on their site, which is their new kind of advice site, they had an article that is titled Navigating the One Night Stand. And then there's this photo of this guy and girl in bed. And the guy has totally greasy hair. That's just a side note. That's
disgusting.
A bonus. I'm just throwing that out there. That's a bonus. And basically, this article starts out telling folks that, well, you know, it's, you know, obviously the one night stand isn't ideal or whatever, but, you know, if you're going to do it, here are some tips to help you kind of navigate that territory. I just want to say that I emailed my friends yesterday and said, it is official. I am telling every person that I know to get off of eHarmony. I think that is totally crazy that they have strayed from their original intent, which was to champion the whole sanctity of marriage and basically the idea that long-term committed relationships are the ideal and you're supposed to have these 29 dimensions of compatibility that are supposed to get you there. What is going on with this?
Lisa, I think you're giving too much...
Preach it, Lisa.
Preach it, yeah.
You're giving them too much credit. They didn't say that it isn't ideal. They said it's not exactly emotionally fulfilling, but it's sex can be relaxing, enjoyable, and fun in any form.
That's mm-hmm. their quote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a reminder. A lot of people still have this sense that eHarmony is a Christian matching service, and this is just a good reminder that their goal is to grow their audience as large as possible, and they realize that the Christian fishing pond is pretty small. And this is obviously showing that either they want to get a larger audience or they want to promote this kind of lifestyle among their Christian audience. And it's something they make pretty clear. I mean, just look at some other quotes on here. As consenting adults, it's absolutely fine for both of you to do what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of scriptures on that. Yeah. And, you know, the key is to make your intentions clear with your date and call it what it is, sex with no strings attached. I mean, I don't remember that in Neil Clark Warren's books. I mean, is that his... Is that really his mission?
Well, that's why I just don't understand where they're going with this. I mean, it's amazing to me that, I mean, eHarmony, even if he's sold the company or whatever he's done, I mean, it was started as a Christian matching service based on his research as a Christian psychologist in his books. And that's where these whole 29 dimensions came from. And I am not joking. I mean, I maybe mentioned this on a previous podcast. I was matched with more non-Christians on eHarmony than on any of the other services I was on. And I witnessed to more guys on eHarmony paying $40 a month to do so, people. Which, Lord, give me a refund when I get to heaven.
Didn't you use your tithe money to pay for that?
Oh, yeah, maybe I did. Yeah, it was the tithe money for that. But, I mean, to do that, and, you know, I mean, and it's just, it's crazy. I mean, more guys online than I have in person in the last 3 years.
It's such a disservice to singles because there is already so much pressure on Christians to mimic the way the world dates.
Mm-hmm.
And there is virtually no difference between how singles conduct themselves sexually if they're Christians or non-Christians. And so to have a supposedly Christian site say, yeah, great, go for it. How is that going to help these Christians do what the Bible says they're supposed to do? I mean, to be pure.
And I wonder if they're setting an expectation among men and women that you could use eHarmony for one-night stands. If you put enough articles on there that say this, they're going to start using eHarmony for that.
Well, I mean,
it's
just listen
like
to this line.
A call girl service. Uh-huh. You know, $40 a month, guys, and you can get...
Yeah, I mean, this line says, once both of you have appropriate expectations, you can appreciate the spontaneous loving for what it's worth. I mean, it sounds like that's exactly what they want to facilitate.
And you know a guy wrote that.
Oh, yeah. There was no byline. There is no way this article was by a woman. Well, what was the part about it's fine to have sex, but don't sleep over? That's too
serious.
It says
snoozing together is too official, and it should be reserved for an established relationship because snoozing is sacred. Sex, however, is recreational.
You don't want to confuse sex with love, is what they say.
Yeah, or sleep.
With sleep. Which could be interesting.
I mean, I'm
love.
Glad that they reserve the sanctity of sleep.
For
that,
marriage.
That they have retained
we're
some values.
Campaign. Save sleep for marriage. Everything
right.
else is fine, but let's save the sleeping for marriage.
I mean, I'm expecting that as the next Warren book, you know, save sleep for marriage.
Well, I just think it's crazy. And I think that, you know, I mean, I don't care what dating sites out there are doing. And, you know, if Neil Clark Warren wanted to sell this to someone, whatever. But I think that they have not done a good job of communicating that, hi, you know, this is not your mother's eHarmony. this is not the eHarmony of 8 or 9 years ago when it was launched a Christian,
oh, and
you know, online
it's advertised on
service.
Every Christian website just about.
And many of the advertisers on eHarmony are still Christian companies. And I think, I mean, mean, if folks want to go there and check it out. I mean, I just think it's concerning. I just personally, literally yesterday, my friends and I contacted eHarmony. I told them to not only shut down my account, but to erase, like eliminate all my stuff off of their site. My friends did the same. One of my friends called and got this really pleasant guy who said, yeah, well, you know, we just feel we need to write this article because it's reality and that's just where people are. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the comment thread after the article, it's tons of people saying, thanks so much for writing this article. This is exactly where I'm at. And this is exactly. Mm-hmm. And my call to my friends is, this is not even like efficient anymore for finding a godly, reasoned evangelical believer. Because if this is the pool of people that you're dealing with, and you're going to get guys like the ones that I did who were like, you know, well, I'm a Christian because, hello, I'm in America. You know, I mean,
it's crazy. Well, Lisa, you're a publicist by trade. Why don't you send a press release to all the advertisers on eHarmony and say, are you aware of you are presenting yourself as a Christian company on this site? And do you know what they're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, and they're talking about reality, but aren't your friends going there because they're trying to get away from the dysfunction of reality, that they're trying to find somebody who's not just looking for easy sex?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to eHarmony because the marketing was done so well on the front end when the site launched as it being a Christian site. Never did Neil Clark Warren come out and say, press release, we're no longer dealing with Christians, we're just opening the floodgates.
Well,
you know?
He kind of did.
Well,
he gave several interviews.
I mean, when pressed in interviews, he's had to admit that, yeah, they really did open it up further, but they still market to Christians as a Christian
yeah.
site.
Well, after 2002 broadcast on Focus on the Family, it really launched eHarmony. He got 100,000 signups right after that broadcast. And then just a couple of years later, he began distancing himself from Focus on the Family because he wanted to broaden his base, because he wanted to go to the secular world.
Mm-hmm. And I said, when I emailed the company last night, I said, you know, really, that I've been totally sketched out by that and just by some of the directions I've seen eHarmony go. But reading this article for me was the last straw. And I said, mm-hmm. if their goal for me, like they say in all their ads, is to find a lifelong partner, well, they're not doing a very good job of it, first of all. And I'm just, quite frankly, offended by the fact that they're telling me that, you know, well, you know, hopefully we'll find you a lifelong partner. But in the meantime, this should tide you over,
well,
you know,
the next
because,
step
you know. I mean, it's just crazy. And then here's their fantastic advice. They're talking about, they throw in like two sentences on protection. Further, always use protection without the risk of sounding like a high school health teacher. Well, you don't. Protect yourself from STDs and pregnancy every single time to avoid, I love this, lingering consequences.
Yeah, because we all know that babies are really the same as STIs, right?
Well, they're lingering consequences. Yeah.
Not only that, but the every single time, like condoms are 100% effective.
Yeah. I mean, the box tells you they fail, what, 75% of the time?
Not only do they fail, but they don't protect against HPV or herpes.
Well, and you know, like they said, there's no condom for your heart. There's no mm-hmm. sense of protection from all the emotional.
Well, they didn't say that.
Well, right.
You said that.
Right. They would say, it's the other day.
That'll be their next article, I'm sure.
Us,
well, you know, I think something that's important to keep in mind here, we've talked about online dating, and we've said that it can be a valuable tool, that a lot of people we know have been able to find lifelong marriages through resources and even through eHarmony. But that we really encourage people to recognize that every tool has limitations. I think we're just discovering more some of the limitations of some of the most popular tools that are out there. We still encourage people to pray about whether or not this might be an opportunity for them to use an online service to supplement what they're trying to do in terms of building mentors and apply biblical principles and work within the church body. But I think as far as truth in advertising, it's important to recognize some of the services with the veneer of a Christian invitation, to realize that service is often trying to bring in as many people as possible and aren't necessarily bringing them in touch with people with shared Christian values.
Well, the irony is that eHarmony sells itself as being so effective because of their 29 dimensions test. But Mott, the research you've done has found that the sites that are most effective are the niche sites like JDate and the Catholic sites, where mm-hmm. really the only people,
sites.
Yeah, the people who are there because of their strong commitment to a religious creed, and all the other people there are also of the same mindset.
I think the numbers are eHarmony. Its success rate is 3% from all the people who are on eHarmony, and the boutique sites is something like 11-12% in terms of producing marriages from the
members.
Yeah,
so even though eHarmony says they want to help people find their lifelong mate, I think what they really want to do is make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think that's why I'm just, I mean, I personally, and I'll just speak for myself here, I am just, like, upset about it. I mean, I think it's a total
sellout.
Well,
do you feel violated that here you were trusting them to introduce you to Christian men, and now they're giving men these articles that say go for the one-night stand?
Well, first of all, when I did eHarmony, it was a big waste of my time. I hardly got matched with anyone, and I've said that before. So that aside, though, I mean, I just feel like it is a sellout. I think it's ridiculous. I literally, like I said, got matched with guys who were not believers, who put forth whatever. I mean, yeah, 29 dimensions of compatibility. That's great. You know, well, no, I don't really share your faith, but at least we both enjoy outdoor activities. Well, I'm not going to pay $50 a month for that. And so I am, like, just giving a call to people to say, do not, I mean, just don't mess with this. This is, like, ridiculous. This is my phrase where I say, don't mess with Lisa A because she don't play. Okay. And I am sorry. I had to do positive things about Bullhouse Farms 2 weeks ago. This is my other side, because I just think it is ridiculous. And I'm telling my friends to get off the site.
That's
and
right.
I mean, I think E-Harmony that people need
is
to examine.
Anti-sponsor.
It is the anti-sponsor.
The Boundless Show.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think people just need to examine where they're coming from. I mean, just, you know, look at it. Take a good hard look at it and just see, you know, what is being reflected there. I mean, this article for me was shocking.
Well, I mean, I saw that there is a possibility they might just go ahead and change the name to One Night Stand Harmony for those who are looking for, as they describe it, a few rendezvous rules to ensure a seamless one-night-only performance.
Ugh. Well, I think we're going to have to go this week and ferret out some things that are positive after this. I'm in the middle of, like, huge projects here at work, and I read this article, and I just got all fired up.
Well, you know, the first thought I had was, this is Cosmo.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I want to read about one-night stands, I know where to go. It's Cosmo. It's not a Christian matching service.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm just really concerned. I mean, I guess I just don't understand, you know, I'm just like, Neil, where are you? I mean, he is still the face of eHarmony. He's still on the ads.
He's,
and so I'm just,
he's the brand.
Yeah.
But what are they trying to do in terms of having a veneer of a brand that really does try to seem to elevate marriage, try to elevate this meeting someone that you're going to spend the rest of your life with, while playing all this stuff on the side? Any brand consultant would say, you're killing your brand. Mm-hmm. Unless someone's trying to be strategic or trying to be clever there.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we'll go ahead and keep folks posted as we hear any more on this story. We'd certainly want to hear your feedback on this. Email us, editor@boundless.org, your experiences. If you even knew about this article, if you've, you know, received all these random posts and stuff from eHarmony, what you think. I mean, go and, you know, you could check out the article, I guess, if you want, and just get back to us and let us know what you think. And if you have decided to go offline or go off of eHarmony for whatever reason, you know, let us know why that is, or just what your thoughts are. I think it's something that we'll have to be tracking in the near future. All right, folks, we do have an update. Since recording this podcast, we've discovered that eHarmony has actually pulled the article that I referenced earlier on here, and they don't have it available on their website anymore. So it now leads to an article on matchmaking around the world, which is fascinating and pretty much not too controversial, basically, in the way that they reported it. That said, this doesn't mean that the story is over. They have in no way indicated that they're changing their ways. So we still want to hear from you. Email us at editor@boundless.org. We want to hear your experiences. We want to hear what you think about eHarmony in general and kind of the turn that they've taken in the last couple of years and just becoming more of a mainstream catch-all site for who knows whom, while at the same time marketing to Christians and having built themselves as a Christian dating site from the beginning. So anyway, we will continue to keep you posted on this. Know that the article is no longer up, but we're still encouraging folks to look at the ramifications of this and certainly do what you feel led to do in relation to eHarmony and go from there. And of course, tell us about it. We want to hear your experiences. We want to hear if you do contact eHarmony, what they tell you. Personally, I've already heard some stories about what they've been told or what people have been told by them when they went to cancel their accounts. Total craziness. Email us at editor@boundless.org. Blessing and glory and honor be to our heavenly Father. Well, it's time for this week's culture segment, and we have back in the studio with us Tom Nevin, who already stirred things up recently with our discussion on the Emergent Church, which actually generated quite the response.
It's always interesting to see the feedback you get.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw that we were dissed a little bit on the blog Emergent Conversations, which maybe you're going to have to go back there.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. So I'm just saying. I mean, I haven't heard now. A couple people commented saying that they had not. They were in the middle of listening to that segment, so they hadn't listened to the whole thing. But, you know, they were taking some issue with it, but that's good. That's good. We'll raise some discussion.
I'll have to check that out.
Bring people back and see what they have to say. Well, today we're going to actually talk about a movie which opens this weekend and has received quite a bit of buzz, and Focus on the Family has certainly gotten behind this film because of its intent and just the uniqueness, I think, of the film itself. The film is called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. It stars Ben Stein, who actually has quite a varied career. He was a speechwriter. He was a political strategist. He's an author. He's written crazy amounts of books that I didn't even know he had written. And obviously, he's an actor famous for the... Can you replicate the...
Bueller. Bueller. I don't think there I sound like him.
Okay, I have not even seen that film. How lame is that? But I went through the 80s where films were of the devil, so I couldn't watch anything, so I'm still catching up. But anyway, Tom, let's get to the film itself. I think I've seen a couple interviews. Obviously, Focus on the Family, we interviewed Ben Stein on our daily broadcast, where he talked really about what the purpose of this film is. And I know I saw him on O'Reilly as well, and he seemed to really be hammering what probably a lot of people have a misconception about, and that is, what is this film getting at? Why don't you explain that first off?
Yeah, I mean, the internet is about to catch fire, you know, with all the interchanges about this film and a lot of it from people who haven't seen it yet. And I think they're going to be surprised. It's not the movie they think it is. Now, of course, it deals with the subject of teaching intelligent design in classrooms, college classrooms, all levels. And it's really not so much a defense of intelligent design as it is a defense of academic freedom, the freedom to dissent intellectually without fearing for your career. There are some stories in the film that are featured, and then some of my own research, that are truly frightening that this happens in America. I interviewed Ben Stein. I wrote some articles about the movie as well, and that's what he said. He said, I can't believe this is happening in America, and A, more people don't know about it, and B, there's not outrage over it.
Hmm. Okay. So what really then, you know, would you say is he, what are the kind of questions that he's asking? I know he's going kind of to the educational community as well as the scientific community, and he asks some pretty politically incorrect questions. So what would be an example of one of those?
Well, the first question he asks or comment he makes is we celebrate dissent in every other facet of American life. We celebrate people who protest and dissent politics and filmmaking and everything else. He says, why is this the one thing, teaching of evolution or scientific naturalism, where there's basically a dogma that has been laid down that cannot be questioned? Why? Why is this allowed in academia, that one point of view is shunned and crushed? And I use that word advisedly. We can go into some of the details. The tactics, and again, I use the word advisedly, are fascist. I know the word Nazi is thrown around a lot, but let me tell you some of the stories and some of the things that have been said and see if you agree with me, that it's just outrageous that some of the things are being said and done and tolerated all in the name of protecting a scientific theory, Darwinian evolution, that for some reason is sacrosanct and cannot be questioned.
Hmm. Okay. So what would be an example of, you know, without giving too much away from the film, maybe a response that's given when he goes after one of these guys and says, look at the disparity that's happening in the classroom. Why is this?
Well, their response, the people who are doing the attacking, their response is, this isn't science, so therefore we can't teach it. Well, you know, first of all, it's how do you define science, and we don't have the time to go into all the details here. But in fact, some of it is science. The one man featured in the film that they don't go into a whole lot of detail in his story is a Dr. Richard Sternberg. Now, he was managing editor of the Proceedings of the Biological Society of Washington. It's a professional academic journal, peer-reviewed. It's affiliated with the Smithsonian Institution. And in 2004, Sternberg published an article in that magazine, peer-reviewed, that, without going into all the intricate details, talking about the Cambrian period, the author, Dr. Stephen Meyer, came to the conclusion that only an intelligent designer could account for some of the things he was seeing in the fossil and the biological record. Now, you need to know that Dr. Meyer has a PhD in biology. Dr. Sternberg, the editor, has two PhDs in in biology. Whoa. Well, anyway, when he published this article, a firestorm broke out. There was outrage that a publication associated with the Smithsonian Institution would dare suggest intelligent design, that there might be something to it. They couldn't really come out and fire him, the complications of civil service rules and things like that. But what they did is they started withdrawing privileges. They moved him into a smaller office. It's almost like junior high school, you know. They moved him into a smaller office. They withdrew lab privileges. They did everything they could do to make him leave without outright firing him. Then he found out that they were working, these are government employees working with an outside non-governmental advocacy group, a nonprofit group called the National Center for Science Education. They were investigating his religious background, his beliefs, his church. They were digging up details on him. Let me read an email that an investigation uncovered by one of his colleagues, and I'm quoting here. Scientists have been perfectly willing to let these people alone in their churches, but now it looks like these people are coming out and invading our schools, biology classes, museums, and now our professional journals. These people, to my mind, are only a scale up on the fundies of a more destructive kind in other parts of the world. End quote. They said that all the things they were doing against him were for professional misconduct, but it was actually a personal attack on him by both government and non-government employees. Long story short, Sternberg appealed to the General Accounting Office. An investigation was held, and Sternberg was vindicated 100%. The Office of Special Counsel, and you can look it up on the web, vindicated Sternberg completely. And yet, how many people know about this, that a government employee was tried, they attempted to hound him out of his job, were investigating his personal religious beliefs, his church, his family background, and everything else, for daring to publish an article that questioned the general orthodoxy?
Kind of reminds me of what's happening in churches, like with pastors, as they have the argument about whether or not they can speak generally about issues surrounding an election, for example. And there are so many little skirmishes going on that it just wears everyone down and exhausts everyone, when really, I mean, you feel like, shouldn't we just have settled this once and for all?
Or again, whatever happened to freedom of speech? And that's Ben Stein's point. He said on the Focus on the Family broadcast, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, we're not asking that our point of view be the only one taught. We're not asking that they can't teach their point of view. We're only asking for equal time and academic freedom so that all points of view can be heard.
So why did he make a film? What do you think, Tom, he is hoping to accomplish by bringing this into theaters? I mean, is this going to, you know, I can't really imagine a couple saying, hey, date night, let's go out and check out Expelled. What is he trying to raise with this?
I think he's trying to raise the issues that a lot of people are unaware of, that, you know, people know generally that there's this argument in the culture of whether we should teach Darwinian evolution in the schools, whether we should teach intelligent design, creationism. You know, we've all been reading the newspaper stories. But Ben Stein's point is, again, he's not so much defending one point of view as saying there's one point of view that is being disallowed on spurious grounds. You know, the Richard Dawkins is probably one of the more notorious Darwinian evolutionist out there. He's a professor at Oxford University. He wrote the book called The God Delusion. Keeps saying the movie and Ben Stein are a creationist front. And the funny thing is Ben Stein, when I interviewed him, said, listen, I think Darwin was on to something when it comes about incremental changes within species and everything. I think Darwin was on to a big idea. Ben Stein's point is they can't explain where it all started. He keeps using he'll repeat the phrase, you know, lightning bolt in the mud puddle, sort of as the explanation for how life began. He said, why can't we debate these ideas? Why do they silence anybody who wants wants to suggest something different from what they believe.
We need to get back to the finch beaks, I think, and just start examining those. So I'm sure they've changed since the last time we looked at them.
But it's funny because this subject creates reactions that are almost comical. You know, within science, there's a lot of disagreements about how, in all fields of science, about is something actually this way or is it that way? And there's professional debates and people disagree, and they do it all professionally and politely for the most part. And this is the only one that the reactions, like I say, are almost comical, but they're scary in a way too. Another absolutely rabid hater of Ben Stein in this movie, even though he hasn't seen it yet. He tried to sneak into a screening and was kicked out, is P.Z. Myers. People might know him. He's a biology professor at University of Minnesota. And his website, it's almost comical. You can almost feel the foam flex spittle flying off the screen. He's so enraged about this movie. Here's what he said on his website about people who, like Ben Stein or people who want to teach intelligent design. Now, this is a professor at a university paid for by tax dollars. This is P.Z. Myers. I say, screw the polite words and careful rhetoric. It is time for scientists to break out the steel-toed boots and brass knuckles and get out there and hammer. And he italicized that. Get out there and hammer on the lunatics and idiots. If you don't care enough for the truth to fight for it, then get out of the way. So this is one of your professors who is being paid for by citizens of Minnesota by your tax dollars, trying, basically advocating brown shirt tactics against anybody who disagrees with them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. I think, we obviously, like I said, Focus on the Family's gotten behind the film. We want to encourage everyone to see the film. I'm going to go see it this weekend. I didn't make it to the Focus screening here, but I'm bringing many friends along with me, and we're going to discuss it afterwards. And I think it is. I'm a product of the California public schools, and I remember when I was in high school, my teacher brought in a metaphysicist to basically give us this big spiel. We had to read some book. I can't even remember what it was. It had a crazy rainbow prism on the front. And basically, this metaphysicist walked around and said, you know, used as an example, pointed to one of the kids in the class and said, if this person next to you wants to kill you, that is technically okay, because what it is it's your spirit allowing them to do so. And I mean, this is like in 11th grade, you know? And I remember my friends, one of my friends' dads heard about this, and he's high up at IBM, you know, just kind of a computer dude. And he heard about that. He took 3 weeks off of work and came in and taught Pilgrim's Progress. And he fought the teachers to go and give an alternative view to what was being kind of spewed out. And, you know, it's surprising for California, but it's so critical to have, like Ben's saying, you know, give both parties a seat at the table. You know, this isn't about, you know, pushing intelligent design. It's about giving, you know, ideas a free rein to express themselves, to put all the facts on the table and let them speak for themselves.
Well, and they're just proving his point, too. I mean, they suffer from an irony deficiency, I think, in that the whole point of his film is that they're trying to suppress and silence dissent, and yet there they are trying to get the film quashed. They're filing lawsuits, sending emails to theater chains and everything to try to get them to not show the movie. And they just don't see the irony in that they're doing exactly what Ben Stein says that they do. Like I say, in a lot of ways, it's comical and you would like to laugh at it. But it's also scary because it's happening in America, that there is one idea that just cannot be dissented from. And if you do, you will lose your career. And there are people that has happened to. They've been denied tenure. They've lost their jobs. As we talked about in the case of Dr. Sternberg, that they have junior high school tactics pulled onto them to try and force them out of their jobs.
Wow. Well, this is good, Tom. Again, the film opens this weekend, April 18th, a Friday. Get people together, go see it, encourage people to see it, and really use it to spark conversation within your spheres of influence about the freedom of expression of ideas, not only, you know, within the private sector and within your own circles, but obviously within academia and then within the scientific community. So thanks so much, Tom.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Wake up and hear the sound of a movement, the song of a revolution.
Would you like someone to tell you to shut up? Well, Steve Waters will in this week's edition of The Hungry Years.
Looking back on my 20s, there are a lot of things I could have done differently. I could have studied harder eaten better food, or not wasted time praying for my beloved Dolphins to get back to the Super Bowl. But if I could do one of those Twilight Zone type things and go back and change one thing, it would be this. I would look for more opportunities to shut up. I would try to get back thousands of stupid, insensitive, coarse, vain, unhelpful comments that I let fly out of my mouth over the years. That one change, I'm convinced, would affect the remainder of my life. But those words are out there. My gossip, my boast, my tasteless jokes, all those bad opinions, they're irretrievable. Now, as a preacher's kid, I should have known better. I know from my dad's sermons that James had some of the best commentary on the tongue in the Bible. Like when James says, if anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless. Ouch. Well, maybe I'm not the only person who has struggled with an untamed tongue. If you, like me, often find your words hurt more than they help, could I suggest the great tongue test? It's not easy. In fact, I've never successfully completed it, although I did learn a lot in the process. Maybe you can do better than I did. Here's how it works. First day, try to be silent. One reason I spoke as much as I did early on is because I always dreaded that awkward silence when conversation ran out. The thing I see now is that the silence I dreaded was rarely as awkward as the noise I replaced it with. The wisest man ever said even a fool is thought wise if he keeps silent. Often in the past, I would remove all doubt about where I stood on that foolish wise continuum by saying everything that ever crossed my mind. And you know, we always promote ourselves, it seems, through our words. We want to impress people by telling instead of showing. But how often do we overpromise with our words and then underperform with our actions? Here's the challenge for day one. See how little you can say at all in 24 hours. Day two, ask questions. When you're ready to speak again, let your words be in the form of questions. You know, Paul tells us each of us should look not only to our own interest, but to the interest of others. But how often do we do that in conversations? Who impresses you more? The person who frequently shares their resume or the person who asks about yours? The challenge for day two is to actually try to listen more closely when someone is talking and to ask even more questions instead of coming up with a response of your own. Day three, only say what you're ready for the whole world to know. I love this skit on Saturday Night Live called Mr. No Depth Perception. This guy is hanging out with his friends, and they can't believe the things he's saying about someone who's sitting right at the table next to them. Because he thinks the person is much further away in his perception, he doesn't see the problem. And how often do we not see the problem when we gossip? Because we assume the people we're talking about are too far away to be hurt by our comments. Stephen Covey says we should be loyal in the absent. And that describes how we should speak about others even when they're not around. In our minds, we should always imagine that they're right there. So the challenge for day three, only say about people what you would say to their face. And that goes for everybody, friends, family, boss, roommate, whoever. Day four, just make positive comments. There's a French proverb that says, to speak kindly does not hurt the tongue. But why is it so hard for us to find nice things to say? Have you noticed it's always easier to complain or criticize than it is to actually come up with something encouraging or supporting? That's what it says in Proverbs. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The point of day four is to look for opportunities to bring healing through your words. That doesn't just mean refraining from saying things that are hurtful. It means actually finding something to say that's helpful, deliberately choosing to bless instead of to curse. Now, none of these days for this great tongue test are easy at all. You'll find it just doesn't feel natural to stay silent or to try to limit the things you say to questions or nice things that can be said to people's faces. But just trying this is a great way to actually start living out the great principles God's given us for a tongue that's redeemed. And you know, there's a very practical benefit to boot. A wise man once said, a closed mouth gathers no feet.
This world is full of questions. This world is full of change. I may not know the reasons why.
For this week's Boundless Inbox, we have a question for Candace Waters, who's here with me in the studio today. This question is kind of an interesting one because even though it touches on relationships and we're going to talk about the whole what do I say to him? What don't I? What's he talking about? Whatever. There's a whole age element in it, too, which kind of puts an interesting twist on it. So you're going to have to tackle both of those, Candace.
I will try to be up to the challenge, Lisa.
So here we go. We're going to enter into a little bit of this girl's story. She says, this is Becca. When I was a freshman in college, I befriended the graduate assistant of one of my classes. His name is Jake. He was just starting his master's degree. He was 23. I was 18. After that semester, we started meeting regularly for lunch or coffee once or twice a week. There's always been chemistry between us, but I think we could both understand the inappropriateness of starting a relationship. So we've been maintaining the status quo of close friends for 4 years now, essentially just biding our time, I think, and I'll be graduating in May. I don't think the age difference is a problem any longer. After listening to me whine about this situation for several weeks, one of my girlfriends told Jake, without my asking her to, that I wanted to date him and asked how he felt about that. He said that I was, quote, the most important person in the world to him, and he really had feelings for me. But that was a month ago, and nothing new has happened since then. I tried the don't hang out with him approach, but that hasn't worked either. I know that he's really shy and doesn't have a lot of self-confidence around women, so I'm not too surprised. So my question for you is, what is my role in all of this? How do I give him the green light? I don't want to be too forward or unfeminine. Thank you for your time.
Becca, I think what you've been doing for 4 years really is dating. And the fact that you go out for coffee and spend time together, presumably just the two of you, even though you haven't called it that, you have given him access to your time and your affection that has been unique. And I suspect you don't hang out with all your guy friends in the same way. And it sounds like from the way you've expressed your emotional attachment to him that you don't. The problem is that you say, we both understood that the age was a problem, that we were both biding our time. It doesn't sound to me like he necessarily is reading from that same cue card as you are. Unless you had a conversation that you didn't mention in your email, there is a real chance that he has just enjoyed your time together and doesn't recognize that he's, in a sense, taking you off the market, making you unavailable to other men, that he may even be defrauding you, if you're going to use the biblical terminology. But it sounds like it's very possible that he didn't think that you were biding time until it was appropriate to date, and that he didn't think that this just hanging out was a problem. It's kind of nice now that you have the benefit of knowing that he likes you, that your friend went and asked him. I'm not sure I would ever recommend that you make that happen on the front end. It feels a little junior high, but but the fact that a
he
month
could have
has
just written a note and like folded it with a mash
here.
Thing.
Well, yeah, and then you there. Do, you know, do you totally. Like me? Yes, check here. But the fact that a month has gone by and he hasn't come back to own any of what he admitted to your friend is concerning to me. And he may be shy, but I think that's a smokescreen. It's not really the main point because he has been spending time one-on-one with you for 4 years. So then you say, well, I tried out the don't hang out with him approach. I'm not sure that that's an approach that you take, that you say, I'll try for a week, and if he doesn't propose at the end of the week, I'll try a different approach. I think what you need to decide is how much access are you willing to give him to your heart, to your emotions, to your time and your availability that he frankly hasn't asked for. He hasn't asked you to be his girlfriend, and you really are giving him more than he deserves at this point because he hasn't asked for that kind of a commitment. The other thing is the fact that you were a freshman and he was a master's degree student, 18 and 23 on a college campus, I'm not sure that the age really was that much of a problem. I agree that the first semester where he was in an official capacity as the grad assistant in your classroom, that would have been an uncomfortable and awkward situation to begin a dating relationship. But once that semester was over, I think that was removed. And so I'm sorry to say this, but I think you've spent 4 years with this guy hoping it would lead to something. And the fact that it hasn't in 4 years, it's probably not likely to happen.
Do you think it's just a little follow-up question here, Candace? Do you think it's concerning that he did tell her friend that he has feelings for her, but now a month later hasn't acted on them? What does that mean? Why is he doing that?
Yes, it's bizarre. I mean, you don't know because you weren't there. You didn't hear the conversation. It's possible he was just being nice to the friend. I mean, she's the most important person in the world to me. Is a bit hyperbolic. I mean, they're not married. You know, does he have anybody else in his life? The fact that they're not dating and he made that statement sounds just a little over the top. So he may have just been trying to get out of an uncomfortable conversation. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. 4 years, though. How depressing.
It is depressing, especially if there was never an agreement that they were waiting and that she just was assuming that in 4 years we would start dating and hear her some of her best opportunities to meet a guy who could become a husband. are gone, and she hasn't really made any progress.
Hmm. All right. Well, Becca, I will give you a, you and I can give a collective bleh to that. maybe we'll start doing that. That's just so like, but I hear you. Anyway, thanks, Candace, so much for weighing in on this. Hopefully, Becca will take that to heart and really evaluate the situation and see what she needs to do to step away and move on in light of that.
Yeah, and, you know, you're welcome. And just one thing that maybe will encourage you, Becca, if there's any hope for this to move into anything other than what it is, you have to not just have a don't hang out with him approach. You have to completely step away from the relationship, sever all connections. And if he feels the loneliness of life without you and comes and chases the plane to get you back, great. But you just can't waste any more time on this guy.
Mm-hmm. Because at this point, it's not a relationship.
Right.
Ah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, Candace. That's it for this week's edition of the Boundless Inbox. And of course, we want to hear your questions. We want to hear from you and want to be able to address your questions. So write to us at editor@boundless.org and we will attempt to get those on a future show. Until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Have a great week, and we'll see you around next time.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.